Hey, this is Sam Taggart, CEO of the DDD Experts, founder of the DDD Association, DDDCon, speaker, author, and podcaster. I know what it takes to build a successful DDD program. And if you want to learn how to transform your sales team and order takers to quota breakers, significantly increase your revenue, and create scalable sales systems, you should listen to the Authentic Persuasion Show with my good friend, Jason Cutter.
Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, a place where business and thought leaders come to weigh in on important sales-related topics that you can use in your sales career and life. I'm your host, Jason Cutter. My mission is to get your help in changing sales from something prospects fear to an act of service they actually seek out and appreciate. Whether you're in sales, leading sales teams, or own a business, I hope this helps you improve your selling effectiveness and you can go out into the world as an authentic persuader. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another guest episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show. So today I am super excited. This is going to be a fun one. So I have with me Sam Taggart. He is the founder of lots of things. So let me go through some of them. The D2D Association, D2DCon. He's a speaker, author of ABCs of Closing, podcaster, and CEO of the D2D Experts, which is his company that helps build multiple seven-figure consulting business, or he built that around helping companies create nationwide and implement and grow their door-to-door. That's what D2D stands for. If you're in that industry, you know it. You probably know him. If you're not, we're going to have a blast talking about door-to-door sales, what he's learned, what he does for companies, and then how that can apply to anyone in sales. Sam, welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show.
Thanks for having me. Super honored and privileged to be on the show, man. So be a good time.
So yeah, and I love these conversations because it's so out of my norm of my experience. So my experience has been call centers, inbound, outbound, mostly inbound, driving traffic, like literally doing marketing, maybe sending direct mail to drive inbound calls into a nice, cozy, warm or cool call center where everyone is sitting there and then they can field inbound sales calls and then sell high ticket sales items, right? Then there's you. There's a realm I've never played in, which is door to door.
We call those people lead babies in our world.
Yes.
Like, oh, you're a lead baby. I see what you are. No, I'm just playing. They're all for sales, guys. And we just have a different niche. So.
And you're 100% right. I mean, being able to sit with your feet up on the desk in air conditioning or in a heated room, cozy and safe. No one's going to pull a gun on you. No one's going to attack you or bite you, hopefully. And to take inbound calls is the extreme opposite end of the world that you come from. And yeah. I love that. And I'll explain some other stuff later. But tell me about what you've learned, what you've seen, where you've come from with that, like about that journey so people understand what that world is like, even as a glimpse.
Yeah. So door-to-door sales, a lot of people are like, I don't think I would ever do door-to-door. Like, that's not for me. I don't know if I'm a good fit. Like, that seems so hard. I actually think it's one of the most pure forms of selling. I think it's one of the most raw, authentic ways to have to break through an initial wall, right? Because it's a cold call. And then you're face-to-face. So you get to read and be intuitive. You get to say, oh, they got kids. Like, versus a phone, you know, you don't know if they're old, they're young. You don't know if they're in the poor neighborhood, the rich neighborhood. You don't know what cars they're driving. So it's so cool because you get to be like Spider-Man. You get to be like super like slow-mo, like let's look at this, analyze the situation, and then be really intuitive to see how you can break their preoccupation or break that ice and then have a good authentic conversation with them and then transact. And most door-to-door sales, it's usually one to two touches, whether it's I'm coming in your house and sitting down right now and we're selling, or I'm setting up an appointment to come sell you later. Or maybe I set up two appointments, sell you a first initial and then a second follow-up appointment to close you. And that's like raw selling. And I think a lot of people, the more they were to go do and practice and get their face kicked in that many times in a row, instead of kind of like, oh, I had three or four appointments come in today on my calendar through my marketing or whatever, versus like, no, you just got to get out of the car and you got to just go make something happen. So I think of it as like, I call it the dinosaur. There's three types of dinosaurs, and you have your herbivores, you have your omnivores, and you have your carnivores. And in sales, I think most people are salespeople that are herbivores, meaning like they go eat the plants, they go just kind of take the leads. And it's like, as long as it grows right there, I eat. Where the carnivores are kind of like, we're on the hunt. Like, we don't know what we're going to eat until I go find it. And if I don't go find it, I starve. And so the door-to-door sector, you could call as the carnivores of the world. Some of them do a little bit of an omnivore setting where they're doing leads and online stuff, and then they're going to the homes. It's kind of a middle ground. I come from a world of just straight carnivores, and that's kind of in my MO.
I absolutely love that analogy. I've never heard that before with those three types of dinosaurs. For me, I put it in terms of order takers are those herbivores, right? So they just basically are going to be picking up whatever happens to fall in their lap. Whoever says, here's my money, please, can I buy from you, right?
Yeah.
And usually that leads to most people not being successful in sales for themselves or their companies because they can't live on being an herbivore. Omnivore, yes, but not an herbivore. So that's fascinating because I love it. And what do you think? Is there a successful place or is that just dependent on the company, the industry, like omnivore or carnivore?
I like the omnivore. The problem is you get in this gray line. So once you start feeding somebody the crack cocaine of leads and like a warm, oh my gosh, like, wait, you're telling me this person's already warmed up? Like, I'm not talking like a slow, like, oh, you just became a new baby. It's like, I just took the carnivore out of you. Congratulations. Yep. And so a lot of business owners and leaders, I would caution them and just saying, be careful around you supplying the leads because your salespeople obviously are going to ask, hey, how come we can't do more marketing? How come we can't do more leads? How come you don't just give me the more appointments? Or maybe you're doing leads for some other guy and you're giving him 10 and you're only giving this guy 2. And you're just like, I'm a better closer. I'm the best. Like, why don't you give me more? And all of a sudden, his anticipation of maybe a third or fourth is literally the killer of his prey drive as a carnivore to actually go hunt. And it takes away that prey drive of the anticipation of possibly maybe getting a lead or an appointment. Better keep my calendar wide open just in case that they don't have this rhythm of like hunt, 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 hunt or die, hunt, hunt, hunt or die. So you got to have a good system in place to make sure that you don't kill your culture of carnivores by letting them bleed into this omnivore world where they're kind of juggling both. It's just hard to transition back and forth. It's like, today, am I a carnivore or am I a herbivore? Like, what am I doing today? So there's a gray line there and it takes some sophistication to make sure you don't kill your culture.
I love that point too. In my opinion, I think organizations being very intentional about what they want to set up as a culture and then stick to and draw that line in the sand. There's nothing wrong with doing that marketing and handing leads, but to your point, which is so valid, and I've seen it destroy the expectations from leadership on so many sales teams, which is like, okay, here's some leads, go call these people. This is your hunting, right? This is your carnivore list. Oh, and by the way, we're going to give you these leads here from time to time. And you're right, it is instant. And that's okay if you can sustain that long term, if you're going to make that decision and then expect like, okay, now we're giving you this, you're no longer a carnivore, right? Now you're a zoo animal who's now we're just going to feed you in the cage. Literally, you can't hunt on your own. If we let you go in the wild, you would literally be useless because you're expecting to be fed.
Yes.
Yeah. And what's wild about that is, like you said, how instant. And the analogy I always use is hunting sometimes. I talk about people having to make those cold calls, those outbounds, knocking on doors as like maybe a cheeseburger from McDonald's, right? It's like, okay, I'm going to get this cheeseburger, I'm going to eat. And then there's this inbound lead, especially like direct mail that I used to do, where it's like, okay, here's filet mignon with all the sides. Once you have filet mignon, I'm not going back to McDonald's. And then if I give you 6 filet mignons a day, the other challenge, and this is what's interesting with that part, and tell me what your experience is you give somebody the leads, then they get used to it. And if they know more leads are coming, they don't work very hard on the leads they have because they're waiting for that next easy deal who's they talk to, they knock on, they bring up, and they just say yes.
That's why we say it's the crack cocaine. So here's where there is some power in being a phenomenal marketer. And if you can shock call, like, I know how to create lead on demand and I know how to create good lead on demand, then there is power in I can dictate what I pay my people. I've got pay scale manipulation strength. I've got retention strength. I've got recruiting strength. So it's like I can attract better herbivores because it's like, yeah, this is a privilege. And as long as they understand it's a privilege to get my sexy leads and I can turn that faucet off and make you starve. And that sucks because that's your paycheck. And I now become like the mafia. Like You know what I mean? So there is some power in being that. But the problem is most companies, they have roller coasters of swings, right? They'll have like, this quarter we had like some good leads. And then all of a sudden, like Facebook changed an algorithm and all of a sudden leads turn off. And you're just like, well, how come you aren't selling? Like, I know we don't have leads this week, but what did you guys do all week? I don't know. You didn't give me any leads. Like, what do you want me to do? It's like, I don't know. Maybe do something. Like, as long as you're like a wizard at that, you can be in an interesting control zone. But I found that most of the time, it's really, really hard to shot call leads. And you're trying all these different avenues. You're like, I want affiliates and I want billboard. And then I'm going to do Facebook. And then I'm going to do direct mail. And then it's like, what source is going to give me the best ROI and which is the hottest? And it's like, you're giving the best leads to that guy, not me. It's like, what is the best lead? Like, that's all relative. That's all subjective. So Anyway, that's my two cents.
And it's always funny too, because if you have a bunch of lead sources, then everybody has their preference and they have the ones they don't like, which are usually the opposite of other people on the team. Be like, I love Facebook, but I hate the web forms or whatever they might have already decided in their head. Now, for you, one of the things you mentioned earlier, which I think is fascinating, you talked about the different approaches, especially in the D2D space, which is the, I knock on your door, I want to get into the living room and I want to talk to you and I want to sell you, let's say mostly on the spot, right? You're going for that one touch kind of close. And then there's the, I'm knocking on your door because I'm setting an appointment for the closer or whoever's coming behind me to do their work. Is there any framework or suggestions to help people decide which one might be best? Is there like a price point? Like, how do you help your clients, or what would you tell the companies? Like, this is good for here or this is good for there?
Well, low ticket items don't do set or closer no matter what. High ticket items like home improvement, windows, doors, roofing, solar, any kind of like higher ticket, you could do the set or closer. I've ran both. I mean, I had 100 sales reps, 60 setters, 40 closers. And again, you now have this carnivore, and then you've got these herbivores out here that are just taking appointments. And the second your carnivores want to be herbivores because they see what they're making. And then they're like, ah, and then all of a sudden your best carnivores turn into herbivores because they graduate. So there's a lot of conundrum when you're trying to build a setter closer model where people are setting appointments, passing it off to closers. You're adding three hard key poisons that you just have to be willing to pick and accept. And that is, you're going to always be backfilling your setters, because most people don't want to be just an appointment setter. Most people, when you get hired, you're like, well, I want to be that guy. I want to be playing in the big leagues. Like, I want to be somebody that's the closer and seen in this prestige. And I don't want to be knocking as much. I'd rather be getting spoon-fed filet mignon, right? Second, they taste the filet mignon, they're not going back to McDonald's. So you have to be good at recruiting in order to have that program. You have to have strong leadership that's willing and accepting McDonald's, and they're like stoked about McDonald's. That's like their MO. They're like, ew, I don't even like filet mignon. That's stupid. I would never eat that. And they're like drinking this Kool-Aid. And then you've got to have a clear definition between how leads get disseminated and not let the closers basically get involved in the setters and manipulate where those leads go and manipulate how that transition works from them setting appointments to closing, them getting closes. Because you'll have a lot of people, they're like, my livelihood is on this. Like, those are my leads. That's my guy. And it's like, you create this entitlement and you're like, whoa, 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 no, those are not, you know what I mean? There's a lot of like art and sophistication that goes into that model. About a year and a half in of running this, I was a VP of sales, a big solar company, and I shut it down. I just said, hey, like, we were doing like $6-7 million a month. And the owner, who had nothing to do with sales, like, he was very like operational. He was like, whoa, whoa, you're shutting the whole thing down? Like, you're shutting the setters? And I said, no, I'm giving them 2 weeks. And he's like, what do you mean 2 weeks? I was like, well, I just said to all the carnivores, if you can figure out how to close your own deals, like the guy's setting, you got 2 weeks to figure out how to close. And then the closers, I said, you got 2 weeks out to figure out how to get that hustle muscle back in your body and start working. And I lost about 50 guys. And I was scared out of my mind. I was like, oh, shoot. And these are friends. These are people I worked with for years. And I'm just like, oh, dang, this is not a good move. And our production stayed the exact same. We produced, like, we didn't even miss a beat. And it was a test to me. And because I, in my culture, and this is like, I always say, it depends what your culture calls for, because in my culture, I was willing to go knock. I was the VP of sales. I was the number two sales rep, and I didn't take appointments. I don't like chasing somebody else's appointments. I can go create my own and I'll go close them and I'll sell more. And I just tried to change the culture back to being all carnivores. And then all of a sudden we started scaling at a much faster rate because that was the culture I wanted to embody. So I'm opinionated. but I think the setter closer model would work. Don't do it on like low ticket. And then also don't get convinced by the used car sales guy or the old furniture sales guy or the guy that's 60 years old that's like, well, I don't want to knock. I've been living for 60 years. Like, you just should hire me a setter and then I'll just go close their deals. Be careful to let that type of person into your organization to dictate, oh, we should probably create a new program around this guy because he's a good looking dude and he's sharp and he seems like a good sales guy. And I think a lot of companies, what they'll do is they'll start to like migrate their whole culture around some individual because they're not willing to go do what you need them to do. And you try to cater to them and you're like, oh, I'll create a Facebook campaign for you so that I can get you leads. And now all of a sudden you're chasing a sales rep instead of the sales rep just playing in your system.
So that last part is super fascinating because I've seen that so many times where that experienced seasoned veterans coming in and then trying to dictate the terms of how they want the company to feed them and help be successful. And super caution directly organizations when that comes up and keep them from doing that. And what I appreciate most about your story, about your experience, and then what you did with the company with kind of shifting the culture is getting them to sticking to your guns and having a culture of carnivores and knowing that's what you want. And the people who aren't a good fit, then it's not a good fit. And if they can't stay with the company, then it's just not the right place because you know what you want and you're sticking to it, which is way better than organizations which are just kind of like this blob of values and goals without the intention behind it.
Well, and it becomes out of desperation because everybody's in a deficit of good salespeople, right? They're like, oh my gosh, I got a fish on the line that finally wants to come work here, that's actually got some background in sales and is sharp and willing to do this. I think a lot of times it's a scarcity mindset around, I can't find good people. And the recruitment element of sales is hard. A lot of people are afraid to sell, take commission only jobs or whatever, eat what they kill. And so I think that people, they take what they can get and then they try to like build around these people. But it's like, no, you got to manage the system, not the people.
So one of the things is mindset, right? So if we're talking about salespeople in general, there's the mindset and the challenge. Sales is a mental game and sales is all about pushing yourself, overcoming objections, rejection, all of those things, right? And then making it happen. Then there's the door-to-door space, right? Which to me is the ultimate because now you're face-to-face with it. It's one thing to hide behind a Zoom call or a telephone call, right? I get it. I understand versus face-to-face with that challenge, that rejection. For you and what you focused on or what you found, what advice do you have? What do you look for or tell people in terms of that mindset for someone who's going to be successful in your world?
We could go on for days about this, Jason.
Let's go. Run.
So I'm writing a book right now called The Achievement Framework. And it's literally a lot about kind of the mindsets in sales and business and the backstory of this new book. And so you guys could go follow me. So when it does come out, I'm like 200 pages in, and it comes from the scripture, Matthew 7:7, ask and you shall receive, seek and you shall find, knock and it shall be opened unto you. So that's like the basis of it, but it really comes, the backstory is being in door to door, the word knock shows up in the Bible. You're like, oh, cool. Knock. Like, not really. You know, like, yeah, let's see. No, but it's an interesting principle where the mindset is, first, you have to ask, what do you want? And then you challenge that. Why? Then you seek the path of how you're going to get it. So let's break down. This is like, can I manifest my result? And you build up the action plan and then you go knock, you go take action, you go do it and it shall be open to you. And my belief is everything you need lies behind a door, whether that's your actual door-to-door sales or whether that's you're selling whatever, or you're just trying to, I don't know, accomplish something. Because those that are willing to go knock for what they need and knock for what they want, get what they want and they get a return on that. I'll use an example of actual door-to-door sales. So I would drive out people to area and I drop them off at like 2 o'clock and I would drop. I'd be like, peace, I'll pick you up at 9:30. And most of the time I'm in a sale. And so it's 10:30, 11 o'clock before I'd get done. And they're sitting in a park, like not trying to look like some creeper in the neighborhood, you know, like waiting for me, twiddling their thumbs, probably sitting on like Clash of Clans or something. So I'm cruising back and they're just in the boonies. I mean, sometimes we're in towns of like 3,000 people. We're in the middle of Texas or who knows where, right? I've knocked all over the country. And a lot of times you get a phone call at like 4 o'clock or 6 o'clock. And they're like, dude, can you take me to the bathroom? Or you just dropped in turf, right? Or like, I'm hungry. Can you get me a snack? And I'd be like, well, dude, like, how many pantries in that neighborhood? You got like 500 homes, dude. Don't you think somebody's got a banana or something sitting around? Like, oh, okay. And then they'd be like, oh man, I got to take a dump. And you're like, can you take me to the closest gas station? I'm like, no. So you want me to like drive from my neighborhood to pick you up and take you to gas station and drop you off and drive back to my neighborhood. You know what my hour is worth? Thousands of dollars, dude. Like, I'm not going to do that. I'm like, there's probably 500 and, well, times three toilets per home. That's like maybe 1500 toilets, man. Like in your neighborhood, like right there. You just knock and ask them, hey, I need to use your bathroom. Oh, okay. And I think the mindset of, you've got to be willing to go ask for what you want. And I'm using this as a simple parable, but oftentimes there's a door sitting right in front of us and we're just so scared to knock it, and opportunity is sitting right behind it. And I look at the mindset of a door-to-door guy, and it's resilient, it's tenacious. It has an ability for selective amnesia is what I call it, in the sense of it takes a no and it says, ding, like I'm over it, move on to the next. And it knows how to process that, not take it personal. The mindset of time management. When you're paid 100% commission, most of the time people live on this like roller coaster of commissions, right? And I'm like, well, how do you break your day down into the hourly of like, well, no, maybe I'm not paid on the yeses. Maybe I'm paid on the nos. And I think a lot of times people, they don't realize that it's 99 chisel hits before you hit the 100th time that the marble finally cracks. But it wasn't the 100th hit was what cracked the marble. It was the 99 no's that finally transacted, or and you get paid for the no. And so I think having a mindset around, it takes rejection to get deals. And that's just part of the job. And I think so many people in today's sales world, they're trying to do some magic $1 million funnel and avoid all the pain that comes with rejecting, like just because we're getting soft. I mean, it's like, oh man, like I'll just make this webinar funnel that's going to like automatically sign people up, and I'll just be collecting checks while I'm sitting in Bali. You know what I mean? Sipping on my margaritas. It's going to be sick, dude. And I'm just like, oh yeah, that's how life works. Never heard about like get up early, go work hard and harvest the law of the harvest. Like there's no substitute for hard work. And there's no dancing around the fact that you got to go get your face kicked in and be willing to do that. So you got to have some resilience. And I think a lot of people think they work super hard, but it's like, you know, the Iron Cowboy spoke at our event this last year and he ran 50 Ironman in 50 days. And in about 2 months, he's going to run 100 Ironman in 100 days. And it's like, whoa, like Ironman, they take like 15, 16 hours of cardio. Then you wake up the next day and you do it again 100 times in a row. Mm-hmm. And so he challenges me. He's like, hey, you should do an Ironman with me. And I was like, ugh. He did it in front of my whole audience. I meant hundreds and hundreds.
Oh, no.
He pulls me up on stage. He's like, Sam, bet you won't do an Ironman with me. And he knew that I was already training for a triathlon. And I ran a marathon last year. And he's like, just do it, dude. Full send. Let's go. And $5,000 if you don't. And I'm in front of hundreds of people. And you put me against a normal average Joe. And you're like, damn, Sam, you're going to run an Ironman? You put me next to Iron Cowboy, who's like, just run one of the 100 that I'm doing. And so he's like, one man's hard work is another man's lazy. And I think that this mindset in sales, a lot of people get, I'm such a hard worker. I'm grinding. It's like, well, you called like 7 people today. But yeah, man, it was like, I think all the time we validate ourselves and we feel like we're doing so much, but it's in comparison to what? It's all subjective. And I think that there's another edge that we all don't even know we can find. And so we've got to live just beyond the current edge that we're living and continue to push ourselves. Anyway, so do it, Ironman. I did it.
Yeah. When are you going to do it? Do you know?
May 12th. I just biked for 2 hours this morning. I committed. I was like,
and an Ironman is what again? 100-mile ride?
2.5-mile swim, 112-mile ride, and a marathon.
If there's one thing I know, it's that sales is full of failure. Even if you're a Hall of Fame level sales professional, you can make a great income despite losing more than you're winning. If there's one aspect of sales that most people fear and what keeps a lot of people even wanting to get into sales, it's getting hit with objections. That is why I wrote my latest book, The Sales Consultant Guide to Overcoming Objections, Yours and Theirs. This is the first in my new series of short books, guides filled with what you need for helping you improve your selling effectiveness. No fluff, No long-winded stories, no filler to make it seem more valuable, just actual foundation-building strategies to help you become aware of the true nature of why your prospects bring up objections, the different type of objections, and then specific ways to overcome them that are universal to most any sales process, product, service, or style. Go to Amazon.com today and get your copy of A Sales Consultant's Guide to Overcoming Objections. Or if you'd rather, as a gift to the listeners of this podcast, email me at jason@cutterconsultinggroup.com and I'll send you a complimentary full version of it as my thank you for listening and supporting this show.
And a marathon. Wow. That's awesome. Congrats. I know you'll do well. It'll be super fun.
I don't know if it'll be fun or I'll do well, but I will do it. So, Iron Man, well, fun. None of those like should be in the same sentence.
Suffering is optional. Remember that, Sam. It'll be fun.
I'll enjoy it.
So I'm thinking as you're talking about these traits, especially that salesperson calls seven, knocks on seven doors, whatever. A half hour in, they need to take a break because they're tired of it or whatever. As a leader, sales manager, wherever you're at in that chain, what do you suggest doing with or about or for somebody like that? Because teams are full of those kind of people. So how do you approach that? How do you handle that? I don't want to say deal with it because that sounds negative, but maybe we'll go there too.
No, but how do you resolve this dilemma that most sales managers are in? They're over here cracking the whip being like, let's go. Come on. Like, why are you guys being such idiots? You have the opportunity of a lifetime and you're just making $5,000 a month. Like if you were to work over at who knows where, like you take any jobs, like you're in sales, like you're in the sexiest vehicle in society. Like, what are you doing? So the first thing is you've got to change their association with money. 9 times out of 10, people have a comfortability to income, and society has implanted what is normal and what is acceptable when it comes to earnings. And so they don't allow, like, nobody's going to be like, yeah, I'm not allowing myself to make more money than I ever cared to make. Like, nobody's going to admit that, but they subconsciously sabotage because they get comfortable with getting by. And so they have a natural water line that they need to live at, and whatever their survival need is what they're going to perform at. So as long as they're still paying their rent and still got food on the table, just do that. So whatever that is, I mean, it might be 2 sales in the month and they're done, and it might take them 3 days to do so. And then they're going to like pretend like they're working the rest of the month and convince you like you're getting sold more than they're selling customers. They're selling you on the fact that like, I'm working super hard. It's like, stop selling me, start selling more customers. So that's the first thing I always say to diagnose. And the second thing, mentality of like, what's their association with surviving versus thriving? And then is it a confidence? Is it a will problem? Is it a skill problem? Or is it a, there's like one more that I always say. So it's like, okay, what's the problem here? And sometimes it's they don't feel confident. They haven't been trained. Skill, meaning they don't know. And then will, they don't know why they would need to make more. They don't know why they need to work harder. And then what I would do is I would diagnose the culture. It's like, what does your culture call for? And as a leader, a lot of times it's whatever your pace setting at. And most leaders are afraid, like they were usually the best salesperson or they were really good at sales. And all of a sudden they got put in a management role and they're like, oh, good, I don't have to sell anymore. I just get to babysit all the peeps. But I'm like, no. It means you have to do that and sell lights out. I don't know if you remember, I talked about I was the number 2 sales rep out of 100 as the VP of sales. And I was putting together pay sales and competitions and building trainings and running around the country trying to freaking help all the regionals and the managers. You know what I mean? And I still freaking threw down. I still figured out a way to freaking have my numbers hit. Whether it's calling Janice at the office, girl, throw me a bone. I need to throw down this week. Like, do you got anybody I can just close? Because I got to make it look like I did something because I haven't been able to work all week. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but don't tell anybody I said that. But like, I'm talking like you have to show off like I am still your leader. And there's a reason why I'm the alpha male in the room. And they got to be willing to lead you or be led by you. Then it's like, what's the expectation? So a lot of people, they tolerate. So it's like, with low tolerance equals high culture, with high tolerance equals low culture. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So when I tolerate people that suck, then I will automatically infuse the culture with suck. And if I don't tolerate it, and I always say addition by subtraction, meaning if I'm willing to let go of the guys that suck in the office it actually creates an additional factor where everybody else knows, okay, I better step up. I'm not going to be next. And it sucks because a lot of the times the low man on the totem pole that's got to go, they got the best sob story.
Of course. Like you said, they're good at selling you why it's not their fault or why they really need it. And if they would take that effort to actually sell their clients and sell other people as well as they try to sell managers, I've seen that all the time, they would be amazing, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So hopefully that helps. I mean, there's like a million things. Like I could go on for a long time, but hopefully there's some good like technical things you could do. So just set your standards. You've got to be willing to live by your standard and tie it back to a core value of a company. Like, hey, one of our core values is, like one of ours at DDD is contribution. It's like, what's your contribution today? What's your contribution this week? Did you really feel like you contributed? Like, that's a core value of ours. Like, can you live by the core value? I mean, there's a long conversation, but hopefully that was some good nuggets.
I think the biggest thing, which is the pinnacle of it, and then everything falls underneath, which is what organizations don't do well enough. And that's where I see the ones that have me come in and help them as well, is that high tolerance, low performance, right? And a low tolerance and high performance, especially in alignment with the culture, like you said, a high culture with the core values and what you stand for. And then accountability, right? When you have a low tolerance, you have people who are there, they know you're going to hold them accountable. And they actually like that, the best performers, and they're going to perform better. It's when you tolerate that person who did 7 calls in a day, and you accept that, and you allow that, you're telling everyone that's the kind of culture you have. And the only way to fix that is to tighten up the culture, the expectations, draw the line in the sand, short term, have some carnage on the team, long term, no success. Like you said, addition from subtraction. I think that's great. I think that's fantastic advice for any of it. There's some questions I like to ask towards the end, but I'm just curious, any crazy D2D stories, anything that comes to mind for you or your team?
Nothing crazy in door-to-door would ever happen. You know what I mean? Like we're knocking all over the country in all types of neighborhoods. Most crazy stories always help in the hood. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I'm not trying to throw anybody under the bus, but you just see some wild things. You'll go into homes and you'll be like, what? Like, this is how you live? I'm talking like 17 Huskies in Dallas, Texas, in a 2,000 square foot home. You know what I mean? You're just like, what are you doing? Like, why do you have two bobsled or like Iditarod teams in your house in Texas? But like, okay, here's a good one. So it's my very, very first year selling alarms in 2008. I knocked this dude's door and this is great. He's 6'8", probably 350 pounds, like huge, like Shaquille O'Neal answers the door kind of dude. Big old black dude. And of course, like if you had to, Jason, how would this guy sound if he was to say something? What does his voice sound like? What would you assume?
Pretty deep. Ready to go.
Yo, what's up? How you doing, man? This is him. Oh, hey, what's up? Come on in. And I'm like, whoa, like right away. Like I'm like, what? Totally was not expecting you to sound like this. So I go on inside and he's got pictures of him training with Chuck Norris. He's like, oh, I'm a double black belt. I trained with Chuck Norris. I'm like, oh, that's cool. You know Chuck Norris? He's like, yeah, he's a buddy of mine. So we get talking. And he's pretty flirty. He's kind of like hitting on me, like probably fulfilling all of his fantasies as door-to-door dude comes into home. And he's like, this is it. This is going to be it. So he goes, you want to see my toys? And I'm like, sure, trying to get the sale. You know what I mean? I'm sitting here.
Right,
like,
right, right. You're thinking, yeah, go along with it.
You buy, dude? I'm good. Like, I'm 18. Exactly. I'm a little white kid, like, in a black neighborhood. And he walks me into his back, like, bedroom closet. And he's got a bunch of dolls in a walk-in closet. And I'm sitting in the closet. He's between me and door, like, blocking door. And I'm like, this is it. This is where I die. This is where I get raped. And I'm over here just like sweating, like, oh my gosh, like, trying to put on like the best show. Like, oh my gosh, like, I love how they're still in their boxes. And oh, tell me about that one. Like trying to like keep his attention, like moving and I'm like swerving outside. You know what I mean? I was like, we better get back to the alarm system here real quick. Anyway, he didn't pass credit, so it wasn't a good win. But he invited me to Joe's Crab Shack that night. I did not get molested, but I was like, dude, this guy's 6'8", twice my size. He trains with Chuck Norris, double black belt, and he has me in his closet. I'm losing. Yeah. This is a losing situation. Anyway,
you're definitely not going to get out of that by force, for sure.
No. So anyway, luckily I'm a good salesman. And I kind of weaved my way out of the Joe's Crab Shack date and got myself out of there. So it's crazy.
That's good. And any part of the country? Because I'm just super curious. I don't have a lot of experience, like a lot of going around the country like you have. Any parts of the country where you just like, if that came up again, or you had the opportunity, or it came up in the past where you're just like, I love going to that state, that region, like the best. Is there anything that stands out?
West Texas. I love me like Amarillo, Lubbock, the little teeny towns like Perryton and Booker and like Wellington. And you wouldn't even know these little towns. So I'm a small town guy. I love going to a town of 500, 1,000 population. I'm talking like one stoplight towns and just selling those. And because what ends up happening is they like adopt you as like this like vigilante that comes in and they're like, you're our new friend. And let me send you to all my other family members. You know, it's me and my six brothers that live here. So might as well go sell all the other six brothers. And if we get something, they all get it. And I love small town West Texas by far.
That's awesome. I love it. That's so cool. What does authenticity mean to you?
I love this word simply because I used to think I was authentic, you know what I mean? But then I was like, no, I wasn't. I was like everything surface level. And you can pry off my family, like say I'm super closed off. I actually am more introvert than a lot of people realize, especially with my family. And over the last 6 months, I have just said, F it. I'm going to be so authentic to the point where I actually chose to get divorced. And I felt like I wasn't living my truth for a long time in my relationship. And it was really hard. And I was being very, very unauthentic. And it was one of the harder decisions because it obviously affected kids, it affected a spouse, it affected a lot of things. And I'm LDS, I'm from Utah, and I live in like this perfect bubble where I have like the dream home. I had a Labradoodle. My wife had a boutique. I'm Instagram famous and entrepreneurial serial. I have a three little perfect kids that are like, I just had that picture perfect family. You know what I mean? It's like people would want to like, we could be bloggers and probably crush life. And I just realized like I was chasing this like weird idealness. But for the last like minute, I mean, even my religious beliefs, I've just gone on a whole blank slate. And when I think of authenticity, it's being willing to show true self and not be afraid of people's judgment, perceptions, context. And it has been so freaking freeing. So when I think of authenticity, I think of freedom. I think of the ability to live your life instead of someone else's life. And I don't know, I have a lot on that.
Well, first off, appreciate you for sharing all of that. Obviously is a sign of that authenticity and that transformation. A lot of people wouldn't admit those things or say those things. So I acknowledge that and appreciate you for saying it. And I think how you broke that down was fantastic. I mean, I appreciate that and relate to that for sure. On the other side of the equation for authentic and persuasion part, what do you feel about persuasion and or what do you think that means or how that fits into your life to sales?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people think salespeople, again, persuasion is in the scriptures quite a bit. They use that word a lot. And I think persuasion has a negative context. And when you bring authentic persuasion with true alignment and creating win-wins with like when you're being authentic, like it was so funny. I had a sales call this morning, so I'm still selling. And he called me because he's the owner of this company. He's wanting to sign up with one of our big consulting packages. And he has a call with my sales guy and he texts me. He's like, it feels like Kyle just wants to like say anything under the sun to get me to sign up. And I was like, oh, did he promise you the magic sauce? And did he give you the rocket ship that's going to take your company to the moon? And he just laughed. So we get on a call. I was like, I'll get on a call with you, man. Like the last thing I want to do is start this relationship off on the wrong foot. And so we start talking and I just told him all the things that I'm like, here's our pain points. Here's our struggles. Here's our things that we do really well. Here's the things that I don't want you to believe in the things I do. And I'm going to lay everything on the table. And if this is an amazing fit and you see that I'm like straight up care and I'm authentic and I like really do want to see you win, just like I do with every freaking person I work with. And there's going to be things you don't like. There's going to be things you pick and choose. And you're like, that doesn't resonate with me. And that's okay. Like that's part of life. That's like our business is trying to help cater to a lot of different scenarios. And he literally thanks me. This is like an hour ago. He calls me. He's like, dude, I'm in. Like that was the most bad, but good sales pitch I think I've ever heard. And I was like, I'm not a sales dude. Like, I'm damn good at sales. I wrote a book on sales. But I found that the more I can show vulnerability, there's a saying that I always love. The person with the most vulnerability and authenticity in the room has the most influence. And when I think of authentic persuasion, is most people have an insecurity to be authentic and real. And so what happens is when they see you get authentic and real, you now become the influence in the room. You now become the leader of the sale and you have the reins, even though you feel like you're giving up all the cards because you're being authentic, but it actually is a technique of persuasion that's more powerful than I think people are willing to go down that path.
I love how you put that, especially with the vulnerability piece and the authenticity. And that's what people crave, right? Like, I'm thinking about your new client that I know is signing up with you and your conversation with them, where you weren't trying to persuade, you weren't trying to throw everything at them, you weren't trying to manipulate or trick them or do all the stuff, just being vulnerable, being real. And it's interesting because when you do that in sales, in my experience, it's different than how everyone else acts in sales and what they're expecting you to do in sales. And when you do it, the guards go down and they go, oh, shoot, I really want to work with you because you didn't do what I thought you were going to do, which is tell me a bunch of BS and try to trick me into buying.
So I literally, right after that call, I send a voice memo to Kyle, right? Of course, I'm like, I'm training my salespeople. Like, I'm like, here's some feedback, dude. And I said, how about this, dude? Why don't you just try to tell the clients all the reasons they shouldn't buy? And he's like, what? And I said, you're talking to CEOs of big businesses, dude. And when you're trying to sell a big business CEO, the last thing they want to do is hear some awesome sales pitch. I get pitched on 1,000 things all the time. People hit me up on Instagram and call me. And if I don't recognize your phone number, I'm not answering. And so the fact that you just had this conversation, you just came off like to the CEO like everybody else. And I said, why don't you just say, this is the reason why most people don't buy from me. This is the other reason why they wouldn't. This is the reason why I don't think it might be a good fit. And then at the very end, be like, but I'll tell you one thing. Is you can look at our track record, you can look at our results, and they're undeniably better than anyone else in our space. But I'll be honest, there are some quirks that we have, and there's some things you might even not resonate. And it, he was like, oh, that's so good, Sam. And I'm like, that's sales, dude.
I love it. So I'm going to guess little Sam did not think, I want to be a D2D expert, write books, have a show, have a consulting company. Seven figures, all this stuff. What did little Sam want to be when he grew up? Maybe he did. I don't know.
I started selling golf balls when I was 9 and lemonade. Then at 11, I started selling little coupon books. And then at 13, I started painting addresses on the curbs. All I've done is door to door. So I guess I just don't know anything different. You wouldn't, what have I pinpointed in high school or college? Like, did I go to college to say, I'm going to be a door to door sales consultant person? Hell no. Honestly, I didn't even know that I was starting this business. Like, I was a VP of sales of a solar company. I was like, I want to throw a sick event. And then everybody was like, Sam, I'm not coming to your stupid event. You're just trying to recruit me. And I'm like, no, I promise. I'm not trying to recruit you. I'm just trying to help the space. Like, I just think it'd be cool to do this. And they're like, I don't believe you. And nobody was signing up. And I was like, F it. I quit just to show all you people that I am doing this and I am doing it through authentic, like true. I'm just trying to help the space.
Oh my God.
And so I literally had to quit. Like, a very, very cush, legit thing that I built for 2 years. It was like finally like taking a turn of like, I'm making money. And I'm just like, duh, I freaking am all in on this. And it was a really hard thing. And then I was like, oh crap, how do I make money? Because that event lost money at a podcast. I still have never made money on a podcast. And then I'm like, the owner's like, wait. So you're telling me you're going to quit to go to a podcast and an event? I was like, oh yeah, that's, he's like, well, I'll see you in a month or two. I was like, you know, that. I was like, no, I'm committed. He's like, how are you going to make money, Sam? I was like, I'll figure it out. I'm a freaking door-to-door guy.
Figure it out.
I figured it out. And so I'm making it work. I didn't even realize I was going to be doing this.
I love it. Last question. What does success mean to you?
Success without fulfillment is the ultimate failure, in my opinion. So I think success is when you can be in the present and enjoy the moment today. Like, the time is now. And I think so many people are like, I'm chasing success. And I'm like, what if success looked like where you're at right now? Like, how successful is it that you have a heartbeat and you're moving and you're out functioning? And I think so many people try to dictate success based on what everybody else says success is, driving a Lambo. It's like, I've never had a Lambo. I don't know if I ever will. Maybe I will. But I don't want to like make that feel like that's when I made it successful, because you're always going to have this success void chasing something that is never going to fulfill you. So it's always going to feel empty. So I just think like being okay with where you are and accepting and aware of where you are and appreciating that as the success in which you've gotten there to where you are now. So that's my two cents on success.
I love it. Well, thanks for being here and sharing all this stuff. Super fun, beyond what I thought our conversation would be and where we would go with all this. So it was, to me, a smashing success. Hopefully people enjoyed it. You have a ton of stuff going on. So I know the best place for people to find you is to go to the D and then the number two, dexperts.com. Any other places where you do a lot of stuff? I know you mentioned Instagram. You have the podcast. I mean, can they find it all there? Where should they go? And then I also know you have a boot camp that you do, if you want to mention that as well.
Yeah. So at the Sam Taggart, you can follow me on Instagram or D2D Experts on Instagram or YouTube, D2D podcast, whatever podcast. And then we're actually doing a boot camp. We do them once a month. It's a business strategy boot camp where business leaders come in and learn how to recruit more people, train those people, and then motivate them to actually go work. And we have a simple formula. It's like more people talking to more people at a better closing percentage equals more money. That's like the door-to-door formula. And it's like so many people don't realize it's that simple. So we teach how to do that. And we're the best at that. And the other thing is we're doing a tour. Go to d2dtour.theddexperts.com. And we're doing 10 local events all over the country. Like I'm basically Taylor Swift doing a concert in LA, in Phoenix, in Dallas, in Atlanta, in Orlando, in Charlotte, in New York, in Chicago, in Denver, in Utah. So literally May 17th, we embark on this like literally concert tour and doing these sales events all over the country. And we'll have 300 to 400 people at each of those and some speakers. It'll be really cool. So check out our tour and follow that journey. Just because it's like, yeah, we're in COVID. Screw it. Whatever. We're doing this. They're live events. It's not a virtual tour, people. This is like me and my truck pulling a trailer, making it happen. So anyway, check that out.
I love it. Awesome stuff. Sam, thanks again for being here, for sharing all this experience, time, and energy, and your passion for all this. I truly appreciate it. So thank you for all of that.
No, thank you.
Thanks for tuning into the Authentic Persuasion Show. If you found value in this episode, please do two things. Subscribe so you can get each new episode and share this episode with anyone else you know in sales. Together, we can help shift the way sales is done. And if you want to find out more information about how to transform your sales career, or you want help with shifting your sales team from order takers to quota breakers, go to jasoncutter.com. Don't forget that everything in life is sales, and I will catch you on the next episode of the Authentic Persuasion Show.